From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 469, the Infrastructure Release Pipeline with guests Steve Murawski and Michael Green. Recorded Tuesday, April 12th, 2016. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I have two great guests today. One's a regular. Stephen Murawski is back, and he's the principal engineer on community engineering team at Chef and a Microsoft Cloud and Data Center Management MVP. Ooh, the new title. I love it. Stephen is active in Chef, PowerShell, DevOps communities locally and online. Prior to arriving at Chef, Stephen was a sysadmin for Microsoft-focused infrastructures, most notably Stack Overflow, where he pioneered the use of Windows PowerShell desired state configuration on the Windows Server operating systems back in the dark old days. And Michael Green is the principal program manager at Microsoft in the Enterprise Cloud Group Division. He is a PowerShell and DevOps lead for the CAT team. CAT stands for Customers, Architecture, and Technology. He drives customer feedback in the areas of management and automation, creates content to improve the customer experience, and provides a connection to engineering for projects that are adopting new technologies and products. Previously, he worked in the Office 365 Operations Group, where he gained experience using PowerShell to manage environments at cloud scale. And when you talk about Office 365, that is serious cloud scale.
Yeah, there's only so many environments in the world where you get to think tens of thousands of machines.
Yeah, and millions of users. Like, those are big problems.
Yes.
You are not going to radio button click your way through management there.
No. Not if you want to be successful. No, that won't work.
Everything must be automated, do all these things. So, Steve, I think we only had you on like a month and a half ago talking Chef.
Yeah.
Well, you're back so soon.
I know, I appreciate you being willing to bring me back so quickly. But Michael and I just released a white paper on the release pipeline, and it's really focused at infrastructure management for the Microsoft IT professional. And to me, this is such a huge topic. We wanted to get back out there and share that right away.
And I don't know how often IT folks think about release pipelines. I mean, that can be a very devy thing.
Exactly. And that's exactly why the white paper exists, is to introduce a lot of those concepts to the Microsoft IT Pro community, mm-hmm. because it hasn't been a thing in, if you grew up as a Windows sysadmin or a Windows IT Pro, a lot of these concepts just never occurred, back in the early days, because you don't check your clicks into source control, and you don't have a build pipeline for and unit tests for your MMCs.
Right.
It just wasn't a thing.
Although you should. I'm big on tested PowerShell these days. I like my Pester.
I meet with a lot of different customers, and I kept encountering these two sides of a coin. One, on one side, they were pretty far along in, what we could call their DevOps journey.
Sure.
And kind of using these new patterns and practices. And they would ask, hey, so where's the guidance that says how we should bring Windows Server into this world? And then the second day, I would meet with someone who's not doing that at all. And I would bring up, what I saw yesterday? And they had exactly the reaction that you just had, which is, yeah, that really feels more devy than infrastructure stuff.
For sure.
And they're just, we really wanted to have something out there that provided some guidance. This isn't a how-to document. It's a patterns and practices document. So it explains, these are the things you need to be thinking about. And for anybody out there who likes to write blogs or publish new scripts, there's what I like to say is there's endless runway in this space for people who are content creators and want to go take part in bringing this to the world.
So, I mean, let's talk a little bit about this white paper. What do I need to be thinking about as an IT guy about releasing software? Like, what areas of responsibility do I even care about?
So we decided to break it down. Anytime you come up with this really big, overwhelming topic, I like to break things down into manageable bites.
Right.
So we broke things into source, build, testing, release. So you think about source control, which is not, you know, we, as IT pros, when we heard source control, we're like, oh, that's one of the servers I've got to set up for the devs.
Right? Right.
We didn't really think about it as something that we would use. But I keep getting the question from people, what's the best way for me to share scripts? If our team is doing a lot of automation, what's the right way for us to collaborate on that?
Right. And this has been a conversation we've been having on the show lately. It's like, shouldn't we be checking these PowerShell scripts into some kind of source control? So that, and that's mostly because I just want to know who changed it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so,
but that's not what we're talking about here per se. You're not necessarily talking about managing PowerShell. You're talking about regular application flow and where the IT guy steps into the release pipeline.
So there are a couple of tools that I would consider that should be top of mind if you want to get into this space. The first would be PowerShell DSC, and mm-hmm. the second would be Azure Resource Manager, because both of those will outfit your team to deliver things as configuration as code. So in that case, we absolutely are talking about checking in and versioning scripts that are being used to deploy and maintain the infrastructure.
Right.
And you're really building, you're engineering resiliency into your systems. So you're doing exactly what you just said. Let's go, you know, yes, we've defined how this is going to be built using DSC or using ARM. Let's build into that project the tests that verify this does what we think it does. And let's build into that project the scripts that will go deploy that into our infrastructure. And that's the project that we check into our source control.
Right.
So, yes. So, Richard, you asked a little bit ago, you know, are we talking about the pipeline for delivering applications? And yes and no. So, yes, in the sense that your application should definitely, you should have a pipeline for releasing your applications. Mm-hmm. But we're also talking about bringing that same pattern and practice to infrastructure management.
Nice.
And so that's why, you know, that's why we're talking about desired state configuration. That's why I tend to talk about Chef in this space. That's why we're talking about Azure Resource Manager templates. And being able to take those, that same pattern and practice that application developers have been using for, you know, going from source control to a build process to generate an artifact to then apply, you know, run it through some test environments. We should be following similar patterns and practices. And that gives us the plugging points to add all of the different controls that we need to and go from, you know, more manual controls and like a change board mm-hmm. to peer review of source of things going to source control and then automated tests doing all the verifications. As you move into, you know, your dev, your test, your staging environments, and then on into production.
And there's a concept there that I just love, and that's for the infrastructure, we can declare versions of things. So, you know, maybe it's deploying a domain controller at a remote site. Okay, well, we're going to have a server, and it's going to be an Active Directory domain controller, and it's going to require network connectivity, and yada, yada, yada. Well, that becomes my version of releasing a domain controller, and maybe this is version 4.6.
Right.
And that 4.6 doesn't mean anything to anybody else in the world. It just means that I've gone through multiple releases of what it means to me to deploy that. And currently I'm on my own version 4.6. And if I don't like it, I check in version 4.7. And if there's a problem with that, I go back to 4.6. I just really love that concept of versioning the infrastructure.
Well, and it's also a record of how we've changed things, why we changed things. Like, so much of that history gets lost. It's only in our heads.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a really good book I'm just digging into now, and it's about analyzing your source code history as a crime scene and applying, you know, forensics ideas to looking at how code has evolved.
What's the name of this book, Stephen?
It's Your Code as a Crime Scene. It's by Adam Tornhill. So at least for me, and I came to this book when I was talking about how much I loved the book Working Effectively with Legacy Code by Michael Feathers.
Yes, Michael Feathers.
Because you can actually take that book and everywhere you see the word code, replace it with infrastructure.
Sure.
So the title becomes Working Effectively with Legacy Infrastructure. And almost all of the definitions and patterns still work. Michael Feathers denotes that legacy infrastructure is, or legacy code is code without tests. So if we swap in, if we do our little word replacement game and swap in infrastructure for code, legacy infrastructure is infrastructure without tests.
All right. Well, I think, and we've hit on a key point here, which is how the heck do you test this stuff?
And you brought up one of the solutions earlier that you love, that Pester stuff for testing your PowerShell.
For sure.
Well, Pester is a great test framework for running PowerShell commands and validating the results. Guess what I can do when I run PowerShell? I can test things in my environment.
Right.
And I can, so rather than testing my PowerShell script exactly, we're going to test the outcome of what my configuration management does or what my deployment script does. I can check, hey, did my DSC configuration actually install the right components and not install the things I don't want? Or does it stand up a domain controller and is it listening on the right ports? And we can test and validate those things. And as we find out what breaks our environment, we can put tests in place to catch that type of stuff as well. Like, oh, hey, guess what? I expected to have a firewall port open. It's not open in our deployment script. It was just open in dev because we didn't have a firewall on.
Right.
And so you can find that kind of stuff and include that as part of your release process for your infrastructure.
Well, and also part of the root cause analysis when you were talking about problems too, that you can capture that, create a test for that, and then make it part of your routine for fixing things.
Yep. And then rather than having it as part of just a checklist that somebody has to actually physically look at and go do, now we're making computers do that work. And they're much better at following checklists than we are. Because
as people go down this path, as they're getting started, the natural instinct is, oh yeah, we're going to use this model, but in the event of an outage, we're going to exercise, in case of emergency, break glass, right? So take this really good process that we've now defined. Oh, we're having an outage. I'm just going to remote desktop into this machine and point and click my way through until I get it working again. And then they have no idea what changed.
Right.
None of it was tested. The next time they go into a change window, they don't know what they're releasing into. And so although the intent is good, and I hear people say, oh yeah, but I'm still going to need to have that back door into the system. And like, yeah, well, when we talk about configuration drift, you're the one who was causing that.
Yeah, right? You're the drifter, right?
You
there.
You got a little D on us, yeah.
But, I see the same thing in coding crises too. We got into a practice with a couple of organizations where we had a dev resource available on the weekend while we were doing some of these upgrades and trials and things. And when stuff would go sideways, the coder's instinct is to code. It's like, no, the chances of you writing code that's actually going to make things better is almost zero. We want your insight, not your code. And same thing. It's like the reflex to change things just means you're almost certainly digging a deeper hole.
Some of the piece that comes with this process is for the thing that you're releasing that together with the application owner. Mm-hmm. So the application owner might be the person who wrote it, or if it's packaged software, you probably have someone in your organization who's responsible for that thing. And they never wanted to take responsibility for that release. So
right.
If you released to 100 servers and 10 of them didn't work right, whose responsibility was it to go fix those 10? Well, it wasn't the guy who owned the app. It was the guy doing the deployment. And when you merge these two together and say, as an app owner, it's your deployment script going in that project. The process here is just going to run that script. Then they have a bigger stake in the game. They can't just push things off onto the ops person.
Well, yeah. And the other scenario that happens in these deployments is, oh, well, we can't just push infrastructure changes at any time. And we have these specific deployment windows in which we have to do things. So this model really doesn't fit us.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens in a lot of these environments is, the deployments don't always go 100% right. And so you have to make emergency patches or quick changes to things. And, the same thing where Michael was talking about, we need to have this back door to be able to go make these changes when we need to. And so rather than, hey, we deploy every month or every 6 months or whatever the time frame is, and we have this real regimented process about how we go there, that really all breaks down the minute there's a problem.
Sure.
And by putting in place a release pipeline for how we deliver infrastructure along with how we deliver applications, we've now introduced a level of rigor into our changes that we did not get before. And if the more of that process that we have automated, the more tests, the fewer places we have a person having to touch it, the quicker we can deliver those changes consistently and safely. And so while we're building the capability to go faster, we're also building the capability to do it more consistently and more and keep things more stable than, you know, randomly poking around and changing settings based on, you know, a hunch.
I love that. Guys, give me 1 second to pay the bills, because this episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by Chef, the automation platform for the DevOps workflow. You can use Chef to automate and manage it all, infrastructure, runtime environments, and applications. Chef works in the cloud or in your data center on physical servers, virtual machines, and containers. Get started with Chef today at chef.io/runasradio. So now I hear a philosophical aspect to this, which maybe gives this much more of a DevOps feel, that says we're going to have this consistent pipeline we're going to use all of the time for these things. And even in a crisis, the same workflow has to apply.
Exactly. When the things that we do in those crises that we don't follow that process, those are those undocumented changes that, sure. Go back to when, you know, Michael referred to, you know, how we become configuration drift. You know, very often sysadmins, IT pros will refer to the work that we do as firefighting. Mm-hmm. And very often we're the arsonist as well. You know, it's those changes that we put in place that cause things to blow up later. And
firefighting is also addictive too, right? Like, the nice thing about always being in crisis is you know what to do today. You don't have to think, you just act.
Well, and you can be the hero
all the time.
You can be the hero riding to the rescue. I brought production back online, but you know what? It also takes a toll on you as well. It's addictive, but it also takes a toll, and you know, You start to lose your weekends, you lose your holidays. And where if you get to a point where you have more stable infrastructure and your mean time to recovery for outages is much, much smaller, you start to get your life back and life becomes better as a sysadmin. You get to enjoy life better.
Sure.
And you get to do more fun projects when you're not always fighting the fires. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've talked to folks, hey, I'd love to learn X, but I'm too busy just keeping up with my existing environment. I'm busy fighting fires.
Yeah, I'm in the pounding surf all the time, right? We have this conversation many times on the show, this basic idea that you're never going to run out of work. There's always more to do. Just stop having to do the same things over and over again. So we talked about this sort of four stages of this thing: source, build, testing, release. The source control, I would presume that once we start wanting to check source code in, we're going to check it in to the existing source code infrastructure. We're not actually asking folks to send up something new. Devs already have some side of source infrastructure. You should use it.
So I've actually had a lot of customer conversations about this, and people keep asking me, oh, great. So what's the thing that I need to go build? And I think that's because throughout our careers, we keep associating our value with the name of a product.
Right.
People say things like, I'm the exchange guy. And that's great. But your value to your organization goes well beyond delivery of that one product. Right.
Sure.
So I keep telling you, but yeah, if you want to go build it out, great. And in many cases, I'm actually seeing people build out these unique set of environments per project. So they might have a separate source build test platform per project if they want to, because they don't want to have to deal with probably with interacting with other people, but let's call it cross collaboration for different projects. But what I keep telling people is, you don't have to go build something new. In a large organization, I guarantee you there is a developer somewhere who already has a source control environment,
for sure,
and who already has, you know, let's say Visual Studio Team Foundation Server set up, running. You can use Git to check projects in.
Yep.
You can run a build task, which normally looks like, you know, open the default build solution and just take out everything out of that default template and replace it with one step, run PowerShell. Because there's a variety of community tools you can use to build out what I like to, you know, developers usually call the scaffolding. So Psake, P-S-A-K-E, is definitely one to check out. And that's, you know, you can kind of compare that to Make or Rake for Ruby.
Yep.
But the idea is, let's take everything that's going to have to happen to make this project succeed and, you know, put it in one file that's easy to understand dependencies. And then obviously Pester gets pulled in for doing the testing. Mm-hmm. And then there are tools out there like PS Deploy that can even make the deployments a really nice, you know, use the same framework to describe all projects type thinking. So it really works out well. And if you look at things like Azure Resource Manager, you'll notice that for things like Azure Automation, where you have runbooks that need to occur, and we might have first looked at this and thought, oh, well, maybe I could just deploy it using Azure Automation. Well, you could, but if you think about it as those are orchestration activities that are involved in maintaining that infrastructure, so now you're thinking, all right, we're going to deploy this project. It's going to, you know, put this domain controller at this remote site, and in that project, I'm going to describe some scripts that should go to a service and run on schedule to perform routine maintenance to that infrastructure. So you really want to engineer into these projects everything from the deployment to the what do I do, what needs to happen in that environment on day 100 so that you know, any tasks that normally required me to come in on Saturday afternoon and go into that change window and take care of some business should just be engineered as part of the solution.
I can also see that you're going to end up building sets of scripts for building all the different pieces of your infrastructure, which will gradually get revved over time. It's, you're going to want to end up building sort of coordinated sets of here's what current looks like for this project.
Yeah. And at any point in time, just like a dev project, you might have versions of your infrastructure that are active and stable. And the great thing is now we've got public cloud available to us as well.
Right.
So if you're describing everything as configuration as code and you want to just do a deployment to the public cloud and do your testing there, you know, you probably only have, you know, 15 or 20 minutes of actual consumption that needs to occur to go run those tests and make sure things work the way they're supposed to.
Yeah.
But you can have a branch where you're actively iterating on your infrastructure configuration, just like you would do for a software project. And then you have your stable branch that says, yep, you know, for this solution, we are on version 15.5 and we consider that stable. Yeah, all these principles that they just come over so well, but it is a huge, huge change. And, you know, this isn't something that one person can just say, oh, I'm going to start using this process now.
Right.
Right. The whole team has to kind of agree to it.
Kind of buy into it.
Yeah, but someone has to lead that charge. And I really felt like, you know, that person, if they were going especially into a group of Microsoft IT pros, I'm not confident that we had been giving them the tools to go have that conversation. And that's the white paper that we delivered, was to say, okay, you're going to need help explaining, because for every one of these four steps, you know, source, build, test, release, we explain what it means. And then we have a section, why does this matter to me as an IT operations professional? And when we boil down, okay, build, that this is what this means for you as an IT pro. And
right,
just kind of everybody get their head around these concepts.
I you know, thinking a totally different kind of script, the provision a new user script would be a really fun one to develop. It kind of stands on its own.
Yeah, and the great thing about that, now we've got an opportunity to bring Gia into this discussion.
Gia?
So if you're familiar with PowerShell Just Enough Administration.
Oh, that Gia, okay.
Yeah, so you can put a constrained endpoint and design that into your project. So these are things that should all be forethought. These are not things that you come along with later, right? You just take all these tools and it's like a perfect marriage. And you say, oh, I'm going to have some runbooks that take these tasks that are very complicated and make them simple. And I'm going to perform them against a secure endpoint so that I limit my risk of screwing things up. And all these technologies just come together so perfectly. This is like the most exciting time to be looking at a revolution in infrastructure management.
It's a very interesting angle to look at each one of those scripts as having its specific security context.
You got it.
Yeah, that is very cool. Stephen, how does Chef fit into this equation? Not to, you know, put too fine a point on anything, being you work there and they're my sponsor for this show. But, you know, I thought you guys did a lot of this stuff. Like, this was a Chef recipe and it was a place to store source code and so forth. Like, does it play well?
A lot of these concepts need to be laid down before we can even have the talk about Chef delivery, right? So Chef delivery is one of our commercial offerings where we've actually sat down and figured out, okay, what steps do we take with customers who want to get into the continuous delivery space? Who, you know, they want to be able to deliver infrastructure and applications on demand. Continuous delivery and continuous deployment, two different concepts. Continuous deliveries, we're just always ready to ship, right? And so we looked at how we worked with customers across the board, and that kind of came together to be the Chef delivery product. That is the workflow kind of that we espouse. But until you actually have the concepts of why a build pipeline is important for infrastructure, why we want to, you know, why we want to store stuff in source control, why we want to validate, you know, that those configurations that we store as code, whether they're DSC configurations or Chef recipes or whatnot, until we validate them and then deploy them into a test and staging and production environment and figure out how that workflow works, it makes it very, very difficult to come in and say, hey, you can do a lot of different things with your release pipeline. This is what Chef recommends you do.
Interesting.
And so, you know, because it's this wide open space, very often once you have these concepts down, it's like, okay, what is the right thing to do? And Chef delivery is the right thing to do, at least from our Chef perspective, right? And that's not just for infrastructure. That's infrastructure and applications for how we flow those into our environment. And so I drew a lot of my ideas for what I, you know, how I contributed to the discussion in the white paper from, you know, what we're doing with Chef delivery.
Nice. So, guys, I think we've held the audience out long enough. Where do I get this white paper?
So I created a short code. It is aka.ms/the-release-pipeline-model. Or if you want to save some keystrokes, you can go to aka.ms/TRPM. So either one of those goes to the same location. The white paper that the landing page, you could say, is actually in the PowerShell DSC documentation under other resources and then white papers. And then, that'll link you out to the PDF file. And we actually would really love to hear your feedback. Stephen and I both are really active on Twitter. And, the way I look at it is conversations with customers shouldn't, you know, if you think back like 5 or 10 years, we would go to these conferences. Yep. And we would meet somebody after doing a talk and we'd have this great conversation. And then maybe you exchange business cards, but that was usually about it. Like you didn't have an ongoing all the time conversation. And now with social media, that's such a different time now where, you know, conversations just happen all the time and they can be private or they can just happen as, you know, hey, we're working on this project and I can just jump in and say, hey, have you thought about this? And I just absolutely love that.
It's awesome. And yeah, lots of great conversations to be had here. Guys, thanks so much for coming on Run As. I hope everybody gets a chance to get a look at this white paper, start thinking about how they want to automate this release pipeline.
Well, thank you very much for having us. I appreciate it.
Steven, I'm sure we'll hear from you again. That's inevitable.
Oh, yeah. You can't get rid of me. You're stuck.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.